when you purchase the property first, that doesn't go in your name. It doesn't go in your company's name. But there's actually a LLC created through the intermediary that holds the property until you are able to sell your property. That's how the reverse exchange works.
You're listening to 5-Hour Real Estate Week, where you'll learn to consistently buy real estate in only 5 hours a week. So if you're ready to invest in real estate, achieve financial freedom, and own the lifestyle you deserve, even with your job, this is the show for you. Now, here's your host, Mike Butler.
Okay, hello, and welcome to another episode of 5-Hour Real Estate Week. I'm your host, Mike Butler, and today's topic is tax updates for today's real estate investors. And I've got a very special guest, an expert genius for real estate investors involving your taxes, okay? We've got Eric Shadowin, CPA. He is your real estate tax guy. And today's topic is part three of a six-part series. And put on your seatbelts, put on your helmets, get your crayons out, a good plain notebook, not a piece of paper, because you're going to take some notes on this, and this is powerful stuff. This is how you can defer your capital gains tax when you sell a property. Okay, imagine that, not having to pay any capital gains tax. So with that, we're going to turn it over to Eric, and let's get going.
Well, you know, I don't have a lot of bullet points on this one, and 1031 exchanges in some cases can sound boring, but one of the things I want to mention is this. You just bought your property. You've had it for a couple of years. The market's starting to change a little bit. It's becoming more of a buyer's market than it is sellers. But let's reverse back a year and think about those last couple of years that you were in investing. You bought that property and you turned around after a couple months, 6 months, 7 months, and you had people knocking at your door wanting to buy it because you would have a potential of increasing the money you put into it. Maybe you bought it for $100,000 and they're calling wanting to buy it for $170,000, which was definitely a possibility back then. Bigger terms, maybe you bought a $500,000 apartment complex and somebody's contacting you wanting to buy it for $650,000 or $750,000. And you decide you go ahead and sell it because you're ready for those big bucks. You made $150,000, $200,000 on it. Everything's great. And then you give your tax advisor a call and you tell them, hey, I just sold this property. I made a lot of money. It's awesome. Just a casual conversation. And your tax advisor already has the thinking cap on and wants to know what you bought it for, because maybe you haven't even talked to him about, and maybe you're a new client.
Don't forget the hers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Don't forget the hers, definitely. Because there's a lot of great, I have a lot of great her clients out there, and they're very sharp on investing. But you may not have, your advisor may have not have had your information. Maybe he's a new advisor. We'll just use that as an example. So he may not even know your cost basis that you had in the property. But once you get into the conversation, you find out you have this $200,000 gain. And you ask him, well, how can we reduce taxes? There is a method that we're not going to really get into at all today. It's the Qualified Opportunity Fund that potentially could help you defer those taxes on that gain somewhere down the road. It's too late to do an installment sale because you already sold it. So you didn't set it up as an installment sale, then you can't defer gain. And it's too late for a 1031 exchange. I'm going into this conversation backwards. So
let me tell you what an installment sale is first, okay? IRS has three ways to sell a property. Uh-huh. Okay? So you got a normal, traditional that everybody's familiar with, okay, as a real estate investor. Number two is installment sale, and that's where you sell or finance your buyer, okay? Don't do it with a tenant buyer, but do it with an investor, okay? Because you get predatory lending laws and all that stuff you don't want to get bogged down with. So you can do an installment sale, and what that does is the majority, just like you borrowing money on a 30-year mortgage, when you start off, the majority of that payment is interest. Well, if you're the lender, the majority of their payment is interest. And when I loan money, I do interest-only payments and until they refinance or cash out or what have you. So you can do an installment sale and you report interest as interest income and you have very little principal, and that's what's subject to the capital gains tax. So over time, that'll increase, but that installment sale is a tax benefit for investors. And the only third way to sell is 1031.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Only three ways to sell?
Okay. Well, there's the qualified opportunity fund, which is after the sale. But that's, like I said, that's something that we won't even talk about. It's new in 2018, and it's expected to sunset in 2025. It was from the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. But again, going back to your 1031 and going back to the example I was having. So you already sold it. You're limited on what you can do in saving taxes. So let's back up before you sold it and you give your tax advisor a call. And you let them know that you're getting an offer, you're having some people call you for your investment property, and you're considering selling it. When I work with clients, that's the first thing, the very first thing I will tell my clients, new clients, is I want you to call me before you sell something. During the year, call me and let's have a conversation, because what that conversation is going to include is we're going to find out what your gain is potentially on that sale. And if your gain is significant, I'm going to run a tax projection to give you an idea of what the liability, the tax liability will be. And then we'll decide if it makes sense for you to do something like a 1031 exchange. In a perfect world, in the real estate investing world, we'll talk about, we won't beat up on Trump today, but Trump has used this wisely through his lifetime. You just get into investing, you buy a property, you let it increase in value, you sell it, you do a 1031 exchange into something bigger, you sell it, do a 1031 exchange, you keep on doing that. You kick the can down the road, you defer your taxes, and then you die. And that sounds kind of morbid, but the idea is when you pass, the value of your building, the person, the beneficiary that receives that building, that investment, will get a step up in basis. So you've deferred tax your entire life. And then once you pass, the person, the beneficiary that receives your property gets a step up in basis and you start the process all over again. That's what real estate is meant to be in a perfect world. So going back to the tax projection I'm doing for you, I will give you an idea of what the liability is going to look like. And if it seems significant, then we'll start talking about doing a 1031 exchange. And what a 1031 exchange does is, you sell your property, which is known as a relinquished property, and you buy a replacement property, known as a replacement property, and you defer the tax from your relinquished property by transferring the basis you have in the relinquished property to the replacement property. That's all tax geek terms, but the simple thing to remember is you are deferring tax into your next property. But there's a process to go through that, and there's different types of 1031 exchanges you can do.
The word cost basis, okay, that was Chinese to me when I got started. I didn't know what that was. But cost basis, all that means is total dollars invested, okay? So if you buy a house for $100,000, your closing costs, title insurance, and all that, you might have $102,000 in your investment. That's your cost basis at that point, okay? And that's total dollars invested. Now, going back to our previous episode, as you depreciate that, what it does is it lowers your cost basis. So if you had $102,000 starting off, well, then let's say you had $3,000 depreciation. Well, now you show total dollars invested is now $99,000. And then the following year, you have another $3,000 in depreciation. Now it's down to $94,000. Okay. So when you go to sell it, you're going to have a bigger profit. I want folks to try to wrap their head around what cost basis is, because I didn't know what that was when I got started.
And I'll also point out this, we're in series 3. Anytime you're watching a webinar or something like this, we're talking top level. There's so much to a 1031 exchange. We're not going to cover it here in 10, 15, 20 minutes. There's plenty more that you can learn about from what we're talking about today. So just keep in mind, we're not getting in maybe to some of the weeds of 1031 exchanges, but kind of going back to my example I was given, you might have a simultaneous exchange where you have a house on 123 Main Street and the person next to you at 125 Main Street wants to sell theirs. You just decide to sell to each other and it closes on the same day. That's never going to happen, but it potentially could. That's a simultaneous exchange. The person buying your house is the person you're buying the house from. Those don't always happen. You may have a delayed exchange. That's what's most common. You sell an investment property, and then you have a time period to find a replacement property. And we won't get into the crazy time period. We won't get into real specifics, but just know you have about 180 days once you sell your property to find another property to finalize your 1031 exchange. And then what has happened, what I have found was happening a little more frequently in the last couple of years, is you might have a reverse exchange. It's been really difficult to go out and find places, investment properties in some situations, because it's a seller's market. So maybe you did go out and find a property and you have another property that you want to get rid of. So you would purchase the property you found first, and then you would sell, you knew you were going to easily sell one of your properties. Then you would choose to sell that next. It comes after you buy the property. That's a reverse exchange. Or because what something I haven't explained to you right yet is when you do a 1031 exchange, you want to be able to purchase the replacement property needs to be at least equal to or greater than the value of the property that you sell. In addition to that, your mortgage in a lot of cases needs to be the same, equal to or greater than the mortgage you had on the property, unless you bring cash on your own to offset the mortgage relief that you had from the sale of your property. But what you might find in some cases, the property you want to purchase has a lesser value than the property you sell, but it needs a lot of work done to it. And that's what's known as a construction 1031 exchange. There's a longer process. It still has to be completed in that 180-day window, but it takes you a little longer to go through the 1031 process because you don't actually take ownership of the replacement property until the construction's completed. Again, much deeper conversation to be had there, but just know those are the four types of 1031 exchanges you can have. And with that, once you've completed these, something else you need to know, because this might cause a bit of uncomfort if you haven't heard of it before. The way the 1031 exchange works is you sell your property, but you don't get money in your pocket. Whatever funds that are left over when you sell your property, those funds actually are handed over to what's known as a qualified intermediary. And that qualified intermediary will hold on to those funds until you find your replacement property. And once you find the replacement property, at the closing, those funds that the intermediary is holding will be used to purchase your replacement property. That's what's required by the IRS in order for a 1031 exchange to be eligible. When you're talking about a reverse exchange, those can be a little more expensive because there's an additional step involved. When you purchase the property first, that doesn't go in your name. It doesn't go in your company's name. There's actually I believe it is an LLC. It's a exchange. It's EAT. And I can't remember. It's Exchange Accommodation Transfer, I think is what it's known as. I'll have to go back and look at that, so don't quote me on it. But there's actually a LLC, we'll say, created through the intermediary that holds the property until you are able to sell your property. That's how the reverse exchange works. So sometimes that's going to be a little more expensive than your delayed 1031 exchange. And there's just a few more hoops to jump through in order to get the reverse exchange completed. Do you have questions, Mike?
No, not questions. I'm just fascinated about that. And then Harry Borders, which you know, he's a qualified intermediary. He has a company that does 1031s for investors, and he's a lot cheaper than a lot of these other folks. And remember, the 1031 tax deferred exchange involves IRS. Okay. So once again, IRS operates in all 50 states. So Harry Borders can be your qualified intermediary and do a 1031 anywhere in the United States. And Harry can hold your hand on making sure everything's done right there. And so remember that. So the normal delayed, you got specific things to do before you sell it. And this is just trying to let you have a sneak peek into this world of the 1031 tax deferred exchange. Many people call it tax free, and it's not tax free, it's tax deferred. Okay, unless you die. But anyway, so the big thing to remember is you can't sell a property and then call up Eric and say, hey, I want to do a 1031 on this. Too late. Sorry, Charlie. Like that Tarkus tuna commercial. Okay. The other thing that's really convenient is a reverse that Eric talked about. And that's where you buy your replacement property first and say, okay, well, I'm going to sell one, two, or three, or whatever. You can do multiple properties. He talked about where when you do the exchange, it's got to be greater than the one you're selling. Well, you could buy three of them and exchange a nice property you got into three lower properties where the combined value of those meet the 1031 requirements. Is that fair?
Yep.
Okay. And then what a lot of investors do, and I know many of them across America, they will buy the property that they want to exchange into, then identify the ones they want to sell. But when they buy that property they want to exchange into, that clock starts ticking on 180 days. So here's what the sharp investors do. They'll get an option to buy on that property, which gives them more flexibility and freedom to properly identify what property they want to sell. So maybe they're trying to sell it. I mean, how long does it take for a buyer to get a loan in today's world? Okay, so that can easily go 45, 60 days, maybe longer. You only got 180. So they might do an option to buy to make sure that they can get their property sold. And when it looks like it's going to close, then they'll buy that property. And the property you sell and the property you buy, exchange into, those have to have the same owner name on the deeds to qualify. Okay. And so that's something you might not be aware of. So that's why you got to do specific things before you sell it and check with, that's a good question to go over with Eric Shadowins on your free real estate investor consultation. You might want to focus on 1031s. It's up to you.
I can add a couple other things.
Sure.
If you, so hopefully we've explained the 1031 well enough. Then you might be an investor out there that flips homes. And, you know, we're in that point where potentially the market, there's not a lot of flippers going on right now because the significant increase in homes, it just the issues going on. But you're saying, oh, I want to take one of my flip homes and I want to do a 1031 exchange. Or you're thinking, well, I'm going to be moving out of my personal residence and I know there's a home that I want to purchase somewhere down the road. Potentially, those two situations, you generally can't do a 1031 exchange, but you can turn them into a situation where you can. Let me give you a better example, not your personal residence, but your vacation home. If you have a vacation home, we'll use that as an example, and we'll also give an example of a flipped home. So generally, you're a flipper, and you do 7, 10, however many flipped homes a year. And you go out and you purchase a home because you're going to be, as a flipper, you're recognized as a dealer in inventory. So the way on your tax return, your activity is treated is different than a long-term hold real estate investor. As a flipper, all your property is reported on, if you're a sole proprietor, on the Schedule C of your personal return, your income, net income, is not only subject to ordinary income, but also net self-employment tax. So we don't like that. But in a lot of cases, that's what's going to happen for your flip properties. But let's say out of those 7 to 10 that you do a year, one of them, you go in and you purchase the property and you ran your budget and you didn't do a good enough job on the budget part of it. And you're at an overrun on your costs. And now that the market's changing, you're not going to be able to count on that significant increase in value by the time you get done rehabbing it. So maybe you want to change your strategy. And you want to turn that into an investment home. So with an investment home, what you would do is, because your intent originally was to go in and sell the property immediately, but because of conditions changed in the market and your budgeting, you want to turn that into an investment. And turning it into an investment could make it eligible for a 1031 exchange. And the way that would work is, in a perfect world, you want to hold it at least a year. 2 years is great. At least a year is better. And you want to try to stick a sign in the yard. You want to try to rent it. You truly want to turn that into an investment. Now, maybe you can't rent it after a year because certain conditions, but you held that property at least a year. After a year, if you decide you want to sell it, you're going to sell it potentially at a significant gain. You could do a 1031 exchange in that example, even though technically you're a dealer in flipped homes. Another example would be you have a second home because everybody loves short-term rentals, but not even a short-term rental. You just decided to go out and buy a second home, maybe on the beach in Florida. My wife and I, we have a place at a lake here in Kentucky. We love to go there, and it's a second home for us. But at some point in time, maybe we don't like going there anymore. And we've had it for a long while now. If we decide to sell it, it's a second home, we're going to have a significant capital gain on that. But if we decided maybe we can turn it into deferring the gain, maybe there's another property we can find. So to do that, we would need to hold it for an additional 2 years. And in those additional 2 years, we would need to rent it for greater than 14 days each year. And if we did that, we turn it into an investment property. And at the end of those 2 years, we could decide to sell it and do a 1031 exchange. And we would exchange it into another property, an investment property, not another second home. It would be into another investment property, but we'll use the same strategy. We'll exchange it into a second home, we'll call it, but we'll rent it out for the first 2 years, more than 14 days a year. And if we do that, we've been able to defer our gain.
Okay, let me go back to something that I recall, and I just want to ask you if it's still what you want to call it, part of the tax law. Most folks are married, and they live in their home, okay? If they sell their home, are they still eligible for the $250,000 gain exemption? Together would be $500,000?
Yes, on their personal residence, if they lived in it for two out of the last five years.
Yes. Okay. Two of the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing VRBO, Airbnb, or whatever on your residence and you sell it, as long as you can say it was used as a residence for the last 2 of 5 years, you would qualify for that, right?
Kind of.
Okay. Does so the same apply?
What's happening there is a better example. Let's say you're house hacking. So you're living personally in part of your residence, but you've brought in some tenants and maybe you have a 4-unit complex and you're living in one of the units and the other 3 units you're renting out. So now you've split that up into an investment property and a personal property. So the investment part, you can 1031 exchange. The personal part, you would be able to look at the gain exclusion and be able to take advantage of some of that.
Okay. So that makes sense. So if you can make that your residence to qualify for the 250 exemption or the 500 exemption, if you're partners or what have you, that would be better than a 1031.
Potentially. It's just another option if you're looking at the 1031. To come up with some examples to do a 1031, that would be the two I gave you there for the flipping and the second residence.
Okay. What about your second home, your lake house?
That's correct. So if we sold this house, our personal house, we could take the gain exclusion. And then if we wanted to move into our second home, then we would have to live in it for 2 out of 5 years before we could take advantage of the gain exclusion there.
Okay, so what if you have both and you call the lake house a second home, and many of us have that situation or looking forward to it. If we decide to sell that place, okay, and could we do the 250, 500 exemption?
No, your second home is not eligible for the gain exclusion.
Not eligible, okay.
If so, you have a current home.
If you have a current home. Okay. So got to make it a rental then.
Exactly.
Okay. And so you could have your condo on the beach and rent it out more than 14 days. And then that's rental property?
Yeah. Because this wasn't even, I'll throw in a just something out of the blue that's not even on our 1031 exchange. And this has nothing to do with 1031 exchange, but here's what it does have to do with. You may have heard of the Augusta exemption. Every once in a while, I hear that. You get on tax forms, you see it out in message boards and things. And
I'll tell you where you hear that at a bowling league for CPAs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. No, I hear it from clients. You know, I had a couple of clients ask me this question. So the Augusta exemption, you may not realize this, but your personal residence, you can rent your personal residence out less than 14 days a year, and they don't even have to be consecutive. And you don't have to include that income in your taxes. It's not subject to income tax. It's subject to other taxes, but not income tax. And you cannot take expenses for it. But to give you an example, where you hear the Augusta back in, I don't know, it's been a long while, the Masters tournament down in Georgia.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
A lot of people that lived around the golf course would bring in guests or bring in the actual golfers, and they would rent their homes out to those guests and to those golfers, and they just leave the house for the week or the couple of weeks that the Masters lasts. And somehow they petition Congress, and it's an actual Internal Revenue Code that allows you now to rent your personal residence less than 14 days and not include that income as taxable income. There's a lot of hoops to jump through to get there. There's reporting that you have to do. But just understand, you are allowed to do it and not have to pick that up as income tax. Okay. You can also, because this is the next question everybody always says, because I don't know who thought this one up. It's half true. you can rent your personal residence to your business. That's a possibility. And a not pick up, what's that?
Or a portion of it.
For 14 days or less. We're still on the Augusta exemption. You could do that and not include the income. You get a deduction and not include the income as income tax. That's possible. The problem with that is it's on a large scale. So if you're an LLC, a single member LLC, you're not separate from you. You can't rent to yourself. But on a larger example, our firm, we have a retreat every year and we host it over at, it's Tom Sawyer Park here in Louisville. We go over there for the day and we do a lot of fun planning for a retreat for our firm. At some point in time, one of our partners might decide that we're wasting our time coming over here. I've got a large enough area at my home. We could just do the planning there because it's business. It's not entertainment. You don't want to do entertainment because that's not deductible, but business you can. So we might decide for that partner, we'll just show up at his house and do the retreat planning and we'll pay him an amount. And it has to be fair market value. We're already paying Tom Sawyer Park X amount of dollars every year. We've got some precedent set that here's something we're doing every year and here's some that is allowable. But where the disconnect is, if you're a do-it-yourself or if you're just a taxpayer out there hearing that, an investor hearing that, all you heard was your business can rent and you don't have to include it as income. And that's generally the question I'm going to get from a client or from just anyone, you know, if I'm giving a presentation. It's possible, but it's probably not likely in a lot of your situations.
Okay, we're going over on this one. But this was a popular TV show a while back called The Extreme Makeover. Mm-hmm. You may recall, and they did several in our town. They probably done them in your town. But what they would do is take the family out of the home, go send them on a vacation somewhere. And then they would come in and bulldoze the house, scrape it off the ground, and build a brand new home and have it done within 14 days. And according to this tax law that you're referencing there, the rent income, the improvements that they make to it and all that are not subject to taxes or something. But anyway, so what they do, they bring the family back in a bus, show them, talk to them, interview them or whatever. Hey, we're getting ready to do the big reveal. And so they get out of the bus and then they move the bus out of the way. And they get to see this brand new big home. And they did it for a kid here in Louisville. You know him, Patrick Hughes was in the marching band and all that. And so they scraped their house and built a brand new one. And that's why they did it so fast was because of that IRS tax rule.
I can't confirm that, but that definitely sounds interesting. I'd have to go back and look and see how they did that, but it definitely a possibility.
That's my research, and that's why they did the less than 15 days or 14 days. So that was pretty cool. But we're wrapping this one up. Any final words of wisdom on this one here, Eric?
I have no final words of wisdom at the moment.
Okay. And so this wraps up this episode. And I want to thank you, Eric. And remember, it's got a free gift just for you, a free real estate investor tax consultation with Eric Shadowins. You can reach him by email at eshadowins@dmlo.com. You can call him at 502-326-2319, or you can go to LinkedIn and hit /Eric Shadowins and reach out to him, get your free real estate investor consultation with Eric and get that thing scheduled. And tomorrow's or our next episode is going to be short-term rentals. You're going to love this one. So that wraps up today's session. And if you're getting started in real estate, guys, go to episodes 1-10. It's everything you want to know about getting started. And I need your help and Eric needs your help. Okay. So if you could click the follow button, the subscribe button, enter a 5-star review. Your comments are greatly appreciated. And also sign up for my free real estate investor training. Happens every Tuesday at noon. We call it the Power Lunch. Just go to MikeButler.com. And when you go to LinkedIn.com/IN/Eric Shadowins, give him a great review on there too. I've got a LinkedIn account, but I have no idea what the heck it is. And
it's so great. Anyway, real quick, LinkedIn, a lot of people think of it as a resume. If you turn around and change your thought to think of it as getting business, it works wonderful. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And remember, IRS operates in all 50 states. So if you want a real estate investor expert CPA, Eric Shadowins is your guy, and he can do all of your tax stuff anywhere in the USA because of the software they have. They can pull down a module for your city, for your town, for your state. And it's incredible. So thank you so much. You got a powerful session here, Eric, and we'll see everybody on the next episode on short-term rentals.
Thanks, Mike.
Glad you joined us for another episode of 5-Hour Real Estate Week. The best thing you can do now is put this information to action. To help you get started, Mike created a free resource for you called How to Buy 50 Houses a Year, Even with Your Job. Download it now by going to mikebutler.com/50houses. And we'll see you on the next episode.